presents the plot.
This is Dana. I think Ian was here last year.
Yeah, Ian was here.
This is their second year performing our audit. She's with Osborne Robinson
Bueller.
she was our audit partner last year and this year, and brought up our hard copies of our report, which we also, copies were included in the packet.
Do you want me to go ahead, or did you want to dish up? I wasn't sure I caught that part of the memo.
Okay.
Yeah, the good news is it's boring. Boring is fantastic.
No, it's
so, we could just start out the big book. Basically, the main thing I would point out to you is that it's a clean opinion, which just means everything's in accordance with GAAP. So it's all great. I suspect none of this is new to you, because I know you're getting great financial reporting the whole year. So I don't have a whole lot to really point out in particular. Other than just kind of the format, I know you saw it last year. There's a transmittal letter, which kind of introduces the whole report, and then our opinion shows up about, I don't know for sure how many pages in, but it's the first one that's numbered page 1. And like I say, we just had a clean opinion. And then you go into the management's discussion and analysis, which just obviously has discussion and analysis, just kind of pointing out some trends, changes year over year, things like that. And this is actually a required document under GAAP, and certain things have to be in it, and certain things aren't allowed to be in it. So that was kind of one of the things we did last year. I know you probably talked about it with Ian. We kind of shifted where some things are, so that we've got stuff in the transmittal letter that was maybe used to be in the management discussion and analysis, and then we've got supplemental info, just so that it's more in conformity with GAAP. And then also, if you ever do want to do to submit the financial statement to the GFOA for the award for what do they call it, the Certificate of Achievement for Excellence in Financial Reporting. It's a pretty prestigious award. This is getting close to where it would be ready to do that. There would be a little bit more to be added to it if you choose to do that. I'm going quickly. If you have any questions, please just stop. Stop me. Page 20 and 21 of the document are your balance sheet. And just a couple of high points there. In general, your net position, your equity in the entity, increased by about $6.4 million during 2008. Of that, about $2.1 million was from contributed infrastructure, so it's kind of a non-cash sort of thing, but it just adds to your assets as well. Additionally, water sales were up about $800,000 in this hot summer, things like that. So I know you guys are all very aware of this. And then expenses. Part of why the net position increased well too is expenses didn't go up significantly. You know, they went up about $450,000, which isn't much considering just inflation and just general management. So that was really fantastic. On the balance sheet, one thing I was going to just mention is that cash overall increased by about $1.8 million, and most of that was in the unrestricted cash, which is really good. It means you can use it for general operations. The restricted cash didn't change a whole lot. It's mostly just, that's for sure, the impact fee reserves, but also just cash required by the bond resolutions, you know, renewal and replacement debt service, things like that. There was some activity in your fixed assets. The Silver Creek tank and pump line were finished. They had been, a big chunk of it was in work in process last year, but it was finished and moved into capital assets and is now being depreciated. So that was one thing I was going to mention. I'm sure it's old news. I'm always in the wrong year. You know, this is this year, and you're like halfway into the real this year. The 2009 bonds were paid off in 2018, so that's a good thing. Pretty much the rest of the decrease in debt was just related to normal amortization of debt, nothing unusual. Although the pension liability did go down about $350,000 just based on the actuarial calculations and the return on investment and things like that. So.
Do you want to talk about that now, or do you want to come into it?
We can talk about it now.
Why don't you go ahead and finish and then come talking about it?
Well, I mean, that pretty much was what I was going to point out. And then if you do want to, there's a couple of places, footnotes to take a look at. Page 35 just outlines the restricted cash, so you know what cash you do have that you're not allowed to spend on just anything. And then page 38 is the schedule of your long-term obligations. But again, there wasn't a whole lot of activity, just the really the payoff of the 2009 bonds. The pension footnotes start, it's note 11, and it goes on for approximately forever. It starts on page 43, so we could talk about that. And I'm not really sure if you have specific questions you'd like to look at with it, other than just kind of the general understanding. The state of Utah is actually in really good shape. Most, in general, it's not underfunded. And so it's like for entities in Utah, this whole thing of recording your share of the obligation for the pensions feels like kind of a nuisance, because it doesn't really change how you budget for things or anything. Your cash flow remains the same. You're basically just funding, you know, what they're asking you to pay based on the percentages of your payroll. But we have to record this big liability, and it really stemmed from a project for the GASB, the Government Accounting Standards Board, because a lot of states aren't in that same position. They're very underfunded, and so they wanted this liability to be very clear on the books. But for, you know, entities within Utah, it's not a big, huge deal. It's not going to be, it's not anything to be worried about or stressed about or anything like that. And like I say, it doesn't really change your budgeting. You know what you're going to be paying just based on percentage of payroll and such. So it's kind of a weird animal to have on the financials. You know, in a lot of regard, it's kind of like, oh, whatever, roll your eyes. And the only thing that would be really impactful with this is if you shut down operations, you know, today, and then you've got this big liability to fund. Yeah. So I don't know, do you have specific questions you'd like to talk about with it, or?
So I just wanted to understand a couple of things. So if I look at page 44 down at the bottom, contribution, this is what we are paying as a percentage of our payroll.
Yes, right? Yes.
And that's uncapped. It's not like Social Security. It's
right.
For every dollar of payroll, right?
Right.
Depending upon which tier people are in, right? And then, but our percentage of the liability varies with, not with our payroll, is it with our payroll dollars that go into the fund, or is it our population headcount numbers? So like if we're 1% of all the employees of in Utah, we get 1% of the liability,
yeah,
et cetera, right?
My understanding of this, and maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding is that this is your share. You know, they've calculated your share of the liability based on who it's attributed to, you know,
basically,
who's in the system for you. And then that's your share of the total. Is that your understanding? Mm-hmm. That's yeah.
So it's so, like we have our own, it's like our population only is charged to us.
Yeah.
But then how does that reconcile itself with like the percentage that they charge us? You follow what I'm saying?
That's all determined based on the actuarial.
So do other groups pay different rates?
No, they pay
like
the same.
Like does the county pay a different rate? Do you have any earthly idea?
It's determined by the plan.
It's determined by the plan, right?
Yeah.
But if my actuarial experience here at Mountain Regional is better, can't be on the investment because we don't do that, but if my, you know, mortalities and payrolls and, you know, et cetera, are better.
They look at it as a plan.
We don't.
You don't benefit.
We don't benefit from that.
Yeah. No.
Likewise, if we're worse, we don't benefit from that.
Yeah. So it is, it's a statewide
sort of
plan. They call it a multi-employer something,
right.
Something, I don't know. And so they look at it for the whole state and based on these different plans, you know, and they have several, like you're in the non-contributory system and then the tier two, they have several more, you know, there's a firefighter one, there's a contributory one, so they have each of those plans and the participants on the statewide level. They look at it, do the actuarial studies, and then they determine these rates, and they're the same for the plan for everybody.
Right.
Your share of the pension, it's basically the same of the liabilities based on, but that gets allocated more based on your personnel. So of the liability, the big net pension liability.
Okay, so yeah. Our group experience does have something to do with that. It's not just a smear.
Yeah, it would more based on who's out there that they need to pay out. Yeah, it's not necessarily, I don't think it's going to change the actuarial calculations. For sure it doesn't change individually, entity by entity, it doesn't change the percentages, but it does change the allocation of the liability.
It just seemed to me that, this is probably a little bit of an unfair question. I don't know how familiar you are with it, and I didn't have time to go pull their report down and read it and all, but it seems like that it has moved around a lot.
Yeah.
And since I've been here, and normally you strive for stability, right? You amortize changes over 40 years or the remaining life
right.
of the group and
right.
all that kind of stuff. And it seems to me like the Utah guys are changing, you know, all the time, right?
The rates, the contribution rates haven't fluctuated a whole lot. It feels like to me,
no.
stable. Those are quite stable. But this calculation of the liability is a little bit, it was kind of a strange animal, especially this year where it went, or last year it went up so much and then this year it went back down so much. So it's almost like they had a big screw up for the last valuation and then they maybe self-corrected a little. And then just the markets and stuff too are impactful.
Right. Yeah. But again, you know, normally
yeah,
you try
to
smooth
see that
smooth
evened out.
Right,
yeah, you
yeah.
want to have your assumptions kind of deal with that. So
right.
yeah, I think, you know, like, who knows, maybe they fired their actuaries. I really don't know. I don't know the history. Don't even spread that. I shouldn't say that. But no, I doubt they did. But yeah, you're exactly right. And it is kind of unusual what we saw the last couple of years. So.
Well, you know, in the grand scheme of things, what, you know, the total dollars of the payout and all that's great. It puts an awfully heavy load on them. Salary. You know, I mean, I come out of private industry. If we were paying 15-16% into a pension fund, you know, I mean, we'd gone broke.
Yeah.
And so it's trying to kind of understand why the balance is, you know, why is it such a high percentage of salary and yet the expense and the liability don't look out of line.
Yeah.
So,
no, it's true. It's
anyway.
A strange thing to manage in general, and just kind of the idea of public sector employee or compensation, you know, just base salaries are often lower to compensate for the
I hear
higher
that.
Retirement and stuff, yeah. So
that's the usual.
That's the party
yeah,
line.
Yeah, that's the party line. You know.
Yeah.
And then in the public sector say, oh no, we're falling behind. Government's doing better than we are.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard to know.
No matter what,
unless
nobody's
really
happy, right?
Business, but. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, no problem. Are there any other questions you'd like to go over on the financials specifically? There is a little bit more information on the pension starting on page 54. There's what the GASB calls required supplementary information. It has to be in here as part of the report. So 54 through 56 is related to the pensions. And then the rest of it is information that I suspect you mostly see on your monthly financials anyway. Just some supplementary information if, you know, about debt service coverage, cash reserves, impact fee collections, things like that.
Off of that subject, different subject, were there any deficiencies?
No. Should we move on
zero,
to
zero, none, no minor deficiencies.
These
no,
other
no,
reports.
No.
No, in fact, the one report that looks like this, that's kind of got a little cover and like our little sort of logo, we refer to it as the compliance reports, and there are no findings. There was nothing as far as the state compliance work that we do. We have to test certain things, and there were no findings there. There were no findings in internal control, not even really any suggestions. You know, we talked about some things last year that I know you guys implemented, so. I mean, it's kind of embarrassing. It's like, are we really doing our job here? But what that really means is you guys are really doing your jobs, you know? And so, I don't
so
even know.
So there wasn't anything in a management letter?
No management letter. Like I say, everything is just so clean and so easy. And so So there's two different letters in this packet. One is a general, we call it a report under government auditing standards. It covers compliance and internal control. We didn't have any findings to report. It's all very boilerplate language. So again, boring is good. And then the last report on it is the state compliance, and we listed the things we tested. And one thing with the state compliance, they have a section of requirements we have to test every year, and then a section of requirements we are required to test every 3 years. And last year we tested everything, and so this year we tested a little bit less. We only tested the amounts that are the requirements that are required to be tested every year. So there's fewer this year than last. But no findings, no comments, no nothing. Really, I would actually just say kudos. It's quite the opposite. It's just fantastic working with management. You guys are just so awesome. It's so easy. It's like, spoil us. The other letter we have is just it's required communication with the board. It discusses just some boilerplate things. There were no changes in accounting principles this year. There was no difficulties with management. Like I said, quite the opposite. There were no adjustments even to make you aware of to the financial statements. Just really nothing to even point out. So boring is fantastic. I don't know, any other questions? Like I would like to take a step and just give you guys total kudos, because it's so fantastic to just get this information and it all works and it just matches what it should match. It's just so awesome. Questions get answered, very efficient. It's just a fantastic
product. No concern about separation of duties?
No, we talked about that. The things we kind of came up with last year, I think you guys addressed as far as billing adjustments, where adjustments can't get written off by people that can manage cash, things like that.
Yeah, well, in a small company, a lot of times that can
be a challenge.
But
we've been really pleased with how you guys do everything like that and address those concerns. Really good oversight.
So she may have. Very good. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, David.
Yeah, no problem. I will let you guys have at it with the more fun stuff. Have fun in Seattle. I'll talk to you soon. It was good to see you.
Nice to see you. Thank you.
Nice to meet you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye. And thanks to Lisa and Steve.
Yeah.
Pretty glowing report.
Yeah, pretty.
Well done.
Okay, so item 3.
Do we need to do a motion on accepting of the audit or approval of it or any of that kind of stuff?
No, you can accept it if you want. It's not required under the statute.
Okay, well, it's not required for paperwork.
Yeah. Okay, do we need to go into executive session?
Not tonight.
Yay!
Okay, so we'll skip
and move it
that one. Okay, so item 5 is our consent agenda with the minutes, approval of the PO, and anything else.
No check from yesterday this month, so is it just double in next month?
Yeah, when we sent the board package out, we were only 2 days into May, so we haven't finalized the April close. We finalized it this week, but we just thought we'd do the financial report and the check registers at the same time rather than off months.
Okay. So is there a motion to approve the consent agenda?
So moved.
So that was Ian and Tim. All those in favor?
Aye.
So that was unanimous, Marty, on that. Item 6, we had the department updates in our packets. Did anybody have any questions you'd like to ask?
What award did Doug get?
We're kind of lying to him, as is typical with retirements in the water industry. We're trying to line them up for as many awards as we can get them. Basically, just an appreciation, a service award, appreciation for his service. He helped us start the Northern Utah Water Quality Alliance, which we participate heavily in. It's basically a group that strives to go above and beyond minimum state standards, and also we collaborate to work through struggles and find ways to improve, and Doug helped kick call that off 20 some odd years ago. So that's
Northern where that Utah water quality
recognized him.
Okay.
Good. Can you speak a little more about the Snyderville Basin groundwater policy that I mentioned?
So, yeah, so I am not the expert, but I can give you the cliff notes.
Yep.
There was a moratorium done, I think, in the early 2000s that didn't allow any more change applications into the basin for groundwater. Essentially, no more groundwater development. Surface water was stopped back well before that.
It was close to new appropriations.
Correct. And as part of that process, they specified how much water could be, extracted or taken from the East Canyon watershed and the Silver Creek watershed. Doug has been working hard to prove allowed for the ability for Mountain Regional to move water rights from East Canyon's watershed into the Silver Creek watershed.
And the state's been positive on that.
The state's been very positive on that. The state seems to have had a hard time grappling with the complexity of Doug provided a very thorough, complex analysis to specify how much water we could use, and it seemed to me that the state was having a hard time understanding how to deal with that as their own process going forward.
So this is kind of like a non-traditional step, having this public meeting.
So what the state approached us with at the Water Users Workshop in St. George was that they were not going to approve Doug's process. What they were going to approach was changing the groundwater study and moratorium that was done in the early 2000s to allow, so long as there weren't public objections, to allow for water rights to be moved from East Canyon Creek, from the East Canyon watershed to the Silver Creek watershed in one fell swoop without the need for additional data. So the caveat there is that the Silver Creek aquifers, we need to be able to show that they aren't negatively impacted as we pull more water out of Silver Creek. To change that policy document that they have, they require a public meeting and they require a public comment period. Public meeting is May 21st. There's a 60-day comment period, is my recollection, following that. And then they will make a determination.
Actually, with anticipation that there's going to be public that shows up.
Doug has gotten out ahead of this as best he can. Summit Water is apparently supportive. We haven't heard any pushback from Park City. The East Canyon Watershed Group is ecstatic. And there are many, many entities that are part of that. So we're hoping that it goes through without pushback. And if that's the case, I get the sense that this, we don't know the state's language yet, but I'm getting the impression that the state will allow Doug's full ask of 800 acre feet to move from East Canyon to Silver Creek.
I was going to ask if you needed support at that meeting, but it sounds like you potentially don't. Doug's been out ahead of it. We don't have anybody we think is lined up on us.
No, I would say if you have a hole in your schedule, it'd be great for you to be there. If not, we're out ahead of it as best we can.
Okay. Cool. Thank you.
It seems like the entities would all really be in opposition to letting paper water come in to pump the wet water out.
There's a couple nuances. One is we're importing a lot of water from the Weaver River into both Silver Creek and East Canyon. And then the other sensitive point, that the reason the East Canyon group is so in favor of it is because East Cannon Creek is very, very impaired between Kimmel Junction and Jeremy Ranch. And if we can move water rights out of East Canyon, it could potentially help the long-term situation in the creek.
So does this map here show community on it too?
It does not.
Includes?
No.
It does not.
At least it shouldn't.
Okay, do we have any more questions on department updates?
Oh, I just had that one. What's happened with the tower?
I've asked Chris to speak to that.
Sorry, what was the question?
You know, we were having a controversy about the communication towers on our water tank up in the preserve.
So at this point, I'm talking with the county, trying to determine the best course of action, because we're a little different in the fact that we already have those existing structures at our locations. I can't seem to get a solid answer from planning or from building on if we, when we go for a permit of an existing structure, and if we need to make repairs to make those structures pass code, what they're actually going to look for. I'm just trying to get a handle on that before we submit everything and find out that it's a much bigger task than we really want to take on. So I'm playing chase with the county for the last couple of weeks with that.
David,
so the idea is we would leave the antennas there?
The concept is that we need to get down to one antenna mast or structure. That's all we need for our operation. That's within our property, right? So Chris is trying to define what are the requirements for the tower or antenna mast structure so that we even know what that looks like.
Yes. Yeah, I guess on the back. On
so
the
it's
back
sort of side. Like ground zero.
Yeah, on the back side of this, I mean, Scott and I came to the conclusion in talking with Dave that one tower, which at those locations is defensible for Mountain Regional, because that's what we would need for our use. Mm-hmm. And to go from that standpoint, moving forward. Specifically at the Red Hawk site, the tower or the mast system that is there, it's not to code of any shape. Since that's the sort of hot topic spot, that's the one we're kind of focusing on with Mr. Shady and trying to figure out what code really is. And unfortunately, the mast and telecommunications code is like 1,300 pages. It's insane. And we're trying to figure out what the county is actually going to require for fixing what's there to make it to code. It's kind of that's what we're trying to nail down.
Mr. Shady did email me 2 weeks ago or so, maybe 3 weeks ago now, since our last meeting, asking for an update. I provided him an update. He didn't respond. So it's...
Okay. Is that all for six?
Though that they could co-locate. I mean, you know, cell towers all the time have co-location on them.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, that's the
one structure.
That's the plan. I think based on Mr. Shady's responses to date, any service providers using that structure and accessing that structure beyond Mountain Regional is not something that he agrees with. Where that goes is yet to be seen, you know, we'll see.
Wonder where he plans on getting his service from.
From one of those two providers.
Yeah, because that's the game.
Yeah, my understanding is when this whole thing started with him, the providers had talked to him specifically and offered him, you know, discounted or free internet service, and he was not receptive at all to any of that.
Thank you.
Okay. Item 7, financial management, Lisa Hoffman.
Nothing.
We're going to do that
the
next
The April report. Mm-hmm. We'll kind of do a catch up in June because our June meeting is later. So yeah. We'll look at May.
Okay. Well, then we can go to 8 with updates on the rules and regulations.
Okay. Just before we get started, the approach tonight is we have worked through, I want to try to cover changes in content tonight. I have a version on my computer that is a complete reorganization of this document, which I believe is much improved. You'll see that next month's meeting, the June meeting. So I just want to focus on content tonight. If you have any general comments, we're happy to hear them. We'll incorporate the content changes. In June, it should be a very quick discussion where all the content is still in the document. It's in a different order, which makes it more readable. So that's the approach.
So is the format consistent with the counties? Or does it need to be? Or?
The county, they don't have a rules and regulation type document, Dave, do they?
It's just the...
Or maybe some of the departments do, but...
Most of them policies. Don't. We've been trying to put together a policy document for the county that's all-inclusive. That's still on the back burner.
Okay.
Sounds like they have a good template.
The next revision. Okay. The one that you'll see in June, I think, is a good template.
That's the template.
Got it. So I've just highlighted some of the things that I think are just worth mentioning. I'm not going to go through this exhaustively. Page 7 is the first highlight that I have.
To service.
Essentially what we're asking for is any connection that is requested with a meter size that's over an inch and a half, that owner just has to provide some engineering calculations that show what the instantaneous water demands are so that we can compare it against meter specs and make a determination on meter size. A lot of times customers don't really know what size meter they want, they just want the next size bigger. And we just want to get a handle on that. The larger you go, if you're not passing that much water through it, we lose accuracy. Section 3.4 on page 8, this section was just updated to reflect all of the adopted fees that are in our fee schedule. So there's some additions in here. It's just to make sure that it's consistent with our fee schedule. Page 10, section I, we used to allow for a new residential watering adjustment. So if you moved into a new home, we gave you one get out of jail free card, if you will, as you learned your landscaping. We never used this.
No, we haven't ever used it.
Is that because nobody's ever asked for it?
We just don't have any people asking. You know, they pretty much know what's going to happen. We've not ever had anybody, a new customer, call and like crazy about their first bill.
And maybe part of that is that when, you know, during a home transaction now, you have to provide 12 months of all your utility bills. And my assumption is that people know what to expect. Mm-hmm.
We've obviously more, you know, new construction.
They always know their bills are going to be really high because the landscapers don't want to lose any of their plantings. So they always crank everything up those first couple of years. We always tell people, you kind of need to figure it as your house costs, you know, just the cost of building.
So we've removed it to simplify. If there's objections to removing it, I don't have any strong heartburn to keep it. Section O on the following page 11, This was updated between the customer service and our finance teams to bring it up to speed, make it more usable with how we do things.
Can I ask, why 6 months? I mean, surely in less than 6 months, you can determine if you have a problem.
Right, and I think the thing, I think two ways, Karen. The first one would be, we had someone who was shy of the 6 months, but in the colony that let a leak runs, you know, for a long period of time, they're only going to get 1 month adjusted in with this new plan. Right now, they get 2 months of adjustment. But, you know, so sometimes you have things in the winter, like laterals leak. That happened to be the case with this person. So they have a lateral that's really difficult to get on in the winter. You know, when they do get on it in the winter, usually they're damaging so many things on their property. It's if they can figure out how to mitigate it. On the other hand, too, you get people that have leaks on these new meters and don't care. And then someday they'll say, oh, I want to get a leak adjustment. You know, I've had it for 2 years, but... and then the other thing is, they may have a leak in the summer, and then they check with you in January or February, like, hey, I had a leak last July. Could you give me an adjustment? You know, so you have that scenario as well. And we're trying to say, hey, look, you know, try to make it within this six-month window. And I think we wanted to keep it within that calendar year for the budgeting purposes, too.
Mm-hmm. We're doing budget adjustments or revenue adjustments in years that we didn't collect revenue. So we're trying to match that.
There's a few, you know.
It seems super complicated, though. Like, you qualified if you were, or you didn't qualify if you were in a pumping zone, and the 60-40 and 75-25, just...
Yeah.
I don't know. The whole thing just seemed overly complicated.
Well, we looked at trying to simplify it and use the Badger meters to give us some more accurate leak data. So we run in some test scenarios of some leak adjustments we did last year, and it's amazing how much of them came back to kind of this over 40,000 we split 50-50, and the calculations all ended up being about the same. And then as we dug into a few more cases, even though we can kind of pinpoint a leak, we'd still have to make some assumptions. And so we got started down a slippery slope of having to make assumptions. And this way, it's just kind of cut and dry. This is what we're going to do. Because we had a much more complicated system of, we're going to analyze, you know, max minimum flow for 24 hours and just adjust that. And, but overall, this seemed to be kind of be a good balance, easily understood, easily calculated. And we don't have to make any assumptions. We just say over 40,000, we're splitting 50-50. And last fall, I think Bob had asked for some numbers. And because a lot of these people, for example, they'll maybe get a $2,000 water bill because they had a water leak. Yeah. They still end up paying about $1,100 on average. And so they still get a pretty big water bill. We're not forgiving all of it. So we're covering not quite our costs on the extra gallons, but it seems to work out. So it's kind of 55-45, let's say, after their original bill. So I don't know. It is kind of a weird thing. I would have never thought to call my water provider and say, hey, I had a leak. Can you give me a credit? But we do it up here, and part of it is because I think the water bills can be so high.
Most places I've lived
have that. And they probably did. I just would never have thought of that kind of thing. So.
And we try to call too. You know, if I see something out of whack, I'll give people a call or email because it's crazy. We had some guy, like, for example, over in Woodside, and they use, I don't know, like 126,000 gallons. And you know, they didn't have their sprinkler system on yet, something unthought out and broke. You know, so we called them and we don't have a problem. Oh, you have a problem. You need to go out and investigate. You know, I don't have any water in my house. Well, trust me, something's going on. So we sent a guy out, you know, and if we helped him, we just did a leak adjustment for him. But, you know, it's like, you want to help them. You know, you don't want them to lose their water, and their bills are so high. And so, you know, you try your best. And I've never had anybody be upset about the, you know, you have to pay for the first 40,000 gallons because that's kind of the common usage in the summer for most of our residents. You know, that's a typical, except for the, you know, the really low users, 40,000 isn't out of control if you've got any grass or landscaping, you know, anything above that, the 50-50 split.
I had a 1-inch irrigation pipe where I found it, and fortunately, I was there and I caught it within about half an hour. It had dug a trench in my yard, you know, it's like a power. I don't know. And I think I must have used about 10,000 gallons as best I could estimate over and above what my normal usage, just from that thing running for, you know, if I'd been away, or even just gone for the day, and it'd run for 8 hours, oh my gosh.
And kind of, kind of big picture, last year, people that requested a water leak adjustment, their original bills totaled about $90,000. Out of that, we still collected about 50 and gave back about 40,000. And we thought if we had changed it too much, we may mess with that kind of dynamic.
Yeah.
We might actually tighten that up a little bit since we're going to just look at 1 month now instead of two. So we kind of wanted to get this in place. And I think as everybody gets on the Badger meters, because we're still not quite there, we might be able to get a little more sophisticated with that as we learn it more. Because we can export the data out of there right now and say, okay, your leak started here because you're using water 24 hours continuously and your leak ended here. And it's really interesting because you can see it grow from, oh, it's 5 gallons an hour. Now, a week later, it's 10, then it's 15, then it's 20, and you just, so we are getting some really good data out of there. I guess we're just not quite sure how to implement it across the whole customer base yet. So.
Yeah. I think we'll get better at it.
Badger's batch loading, right? It downloads all the data overnight.
Yeah.
So you don't have any live reporting, do you?
Not live. Well, you would if you caught
or real time.
They all come in at different points of time during the day, and it's usually the same time. So if you get it just after that hour, you're pretty close. But you know, it is. And then you get also some that don't dump for 3 days, and then they dump all their data, you know, so you get funky places. We're working with some new transponders to try to make them more accurate in weird areas, colony, promontory, some up in your neighborhood too, just where they're located for cell service.
Yeah. You know, I wonder if there's a business opportunity to sell leak insurance, you know? Like if you went out to all our customers and said, you know, for $5 a month, we'll cover abnormal usage.
They did that with laterals in Salt Lake. The last few years, you could buy insurance to repair your lateral from your meter to your house.
Oh, yeah.
Because there were so many of them that were failing because of old infrastructure.
Yeah.
And I know quite a few people who kind of pitched in, because for some people, you know, fixing a lateral could be quite expensive, and they'd rather pay 10 or 15 bucks a month insurance, but I don't know.
I don't know if it's a business opportunity or not, you know. Particularly if you're giving away.
Right.
Yeah, but.
It's been explored up here, and it hasn't been embraced, because it's just such a liability for the water districts. And so I know it has been explored over the last 20 years. I think it's popped up at least 2 or 3 times.
Yeah. Well, it could be people would say, oh, I got the insurance, I don't worry about it.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Or I'll let it go for 6 months.
Right.
Anything else on that?
Sorry.
No.
The next one, page 13. Section Q, this is, Dave provided this update on collection of delinquent service charges. It's just coming into alignment with statutes.
Dave, I have one question. May I ask that? If we're certifying with the county treasurer, it doesn't, kind of as we walk through on page 14, it looks like we're certifying with the county treasurer, which we always do, and we'll do that by July 15. But we're not recording with the county recorder's office, but then we're asked to release the lien. So I just wanted to clarify that, like in that first paragraph.
What's supposed to happen is once you certify to the county treasurer,
yes,
the treasurer records the lien.
Oh, the treasurer does. Okay, got it.
Yeah, that's why that isn't in there for for you all. That's her job to basically impose the lien. Then when it's paid off, we have to take the lien off.
Would we do that in December, Dave?
We would. Well,
when you get the check?
Yeah, you do it as soon as you actually get paid. Okay, so because it may be
sooner.
I mean, it may be that you certify it, the property's leaned in July, and maybe they don't pay. And so it just continues to be a lien. But if they pay everything, yeah, it's our job to basically file something to say that we're releasing you from.
So if we get a check for the total amount we've certified, we're assuming that everything's paid and we should release all of the certified liens we've placed.
Yes, if we get full payment.
Okay, so we'll just, that'll have to be like another step.
Is there another certification?
What's that?
Is it another certification to the treasurer?
It's to the recorder's office, right? We do the release of lien?
Yeah, the recorder's office, you do the release of lien.
But the
certification is to the county treasurer.
And we go to the county commission, you'll approve it next month, have a certified tax lien, and then we'll go up to the very minute of the time, go to the council. And then, because some people will pay up as of the last minute before the council meeting, and then we certify those liens, and then the county council adopts that, and then they take it to the county treasurer to certify. That's how it's happened before. Like, King Kent does that.
Yeah.
But the council has to approve it, right, Dave? So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. That's great. Thank you for clarifying that.
The next one is on page 16, section 3.8. The district, historically has always treated large, I'll say commercial or institutional properties such as schools or hotels. Many times these properties have a fair bit of water infrastructure, hydrants, water mains, based on fire code. We've always treated those as private systems, essentially, that we don't own that infrastructure within their property. So if they have a water main break on a fire line or any of that, it's their responsibility to fix that. So this just essentially memorializes how we've been treating that. We charge for each of the fire hydrants as private fire hydrants to maintain those once a year. We have the ability to go in and do maintenance, whether for water quality or for any other reason, but if there's a leak or anything of that sort, it's their responsibility to fix it. So.
That's pretty typical.
Yeah. Next one, page 19, section F, we just simplified. It's not shown in the red line here. This paragraph is duplicated three or four times over, one for each of these violations. So we just simplified it into one paragraph and stated for a second, third, and fourth violation, all in one paragraph. Page 25. Section L is just a definition added for hazard assessment.
So would this, I'm sorry to take us back a step,
okay.
But would this come into play if we had to go to a drought program and really restrict watering? And is this the section we would rely on?
Currently, yes, that's true.
What's interesting about that, when we had those droughts and also the lack of source when we first took over Silver Springs, and we had that in Minnehaha Spring Creek as well, we never had to issue anything over our first warning. People just didn't know or didn't understand, and they were very compliant, just FYI, because we had restrictions on for a few summers.
I think our water conservation plan is due, I believe, at the end of this year. So we're going to be revisiting all this section, Mike.
Yeah.
Page 25, section L, is just the addition of a definition for hazard assessment. The following page, on page 26, section 9, we wanted to put some, just state the code for that no booster pumps are allowed for individual homes. This is a common problem we run into.
But what if the pressure's not adequate? Like, I know there's whole neighborhoods in Promontory that have booster pumps.
So any booster pump inside a house is supposed to have an exception from the Division of Drinking Water. So any homes that...
Not my house.
Any homes...
Care
any homes that we become aware of, we issue them a letter that they need to provide engineered plans that meet the guidance of the Division of Drinking Water. We issue them to the division and request an exception. That's how we're handling it.
Why don't they care?
Because if you kick on a pump and your pressure is already low, the suction side pressure could drop even more, which could lead to a backflow contamination situation into our water mains. So, makes sense. The section 5, page 26, you'll see the new flow chart here. This is a little blurry. We'll work on getting that corrected. It was dropped in as an image. I think what we'll do is when we build a PDF, we'll drop in the actual PDF and it'll be much cleaner. The following page, missing a page number on that one. It's like page 28, section E. We're just adding a construction drawing review step that wasn't described before. This not only talks about what the district, what that process looks like, but it'll also allow us to enact fees if needed. We're going to be evaluating how much time goes into that.
And I just figured out that the page numbers in the packet are different. Right. So we're on 30, you're on 28.
Oh, sorry.
I've been like jumping back and forth. Man, I can't keep up. But it's just page numbers.
Okay. So add two to every page number I say, I guess. Let's see, my page 29. 31 for you should be section 7.
So on your plan review fee, is that constant or does it slide depending on?
Yeah, do you have an idea of what that fee is going to be?
I mean, right now it's in our fee schedule, it's TBD. The way that...
it says this is going to be the ACB sets that fee.
Yeah, as part of the adoption of our fees every year.
So is it one standard fee to be determined? It seems like yes. It ought to be scaled a little bit. Is it 10 lots or 100 lots?
You know? So I think what we can do is underneath that, the name, you know, plan review fee could be a delineation of some sort of sliding scale.
Okay.
Currently, we're collecting 3% for inspection fees based on the total engineer's estimate on the infrastructure that's going in. We need to do a review of that 3%, incorporate all the work that we do on the design side, and see if we're covering our bases or not. And if not, we'll adjust that. This plan review fee may just be absorbed into that inspection fee, or it might be held separate.
Do we currently charge the 3%, or is that going to be new?
No, we do. We currently charge the 3%. In my experience, it seems that on large projects, we come out on the positive, and on small projects, we likely come out on the negative. We need to do a closer look on that.
One of the things is discovery. We must review that one 15 or 20 times. I mean, they brought in new plans every month or so. I mean, they were completely different. And I think that's part of the reason why this is, we're revisiting this is because it was, I mean, those guys, 3% is not even going to come close to cutting it when it's all over.
Yeah.
6 years running through.
Yeah, I mean, it's going on forever.
It's a good addition. Okay.
Continuing on that same page, these improvements on pages 31 and 32, I believe, in your group there, you know, these sections 9, 10, and then some on the next page, it's just tightening up. It's tightening up our process with respect to approval letters and performance bonds and warranty bonds and making sure that we're checking all the boxes on that. Been a little relaxed in the past. Julie Cobley, our new engineer, she's been working with Brian to come up with a contractor's checklist essentially to make sure all this stuff gets done. Page 36 for you, section G, it's just a cut and paste. The acceptance and transfer of the water system. You can see it deleted a couple sections down. Section 5.4 on your page 39, there's a lot of deletion there. It's just a simplification. We don't have any irrigation water systems. There's one secondary system in Quarry Mountain, but in general, you know, this isn't a common situation. So what we said is, we took all these specifics out and basically said that we'll have to have a separate agreement or contract with the developer if we were going to do that, that would specify all these rules.
How do you like this one? That if they don't provide you the conveyance instrument?
Yep.
Kind of going backwards. Then you go back to the service agreement?
Yep. That is...
Does it just let them skip the conveyance instrument?
It lets them skip the bill of sale is what that's saying.
Yeah. Because the bill of sale is the conveyance.
Correct. Right. Yeah. This isn't going to, I don't expect, this is just to cover our bases. Dave provided a bill of sale template that is part of this better scrutiny on the process we're going to be requesting. So this is just to make sure that we
don't provide that, then we go back to the service agreement.
Yep, and that way we're covered.
Is the service agreement more stringent than the bill of sale?
No. No. In fact, the service agreement we will be updating based on these changes to make sure they're consistent.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Yeah. And that's all I have.
Some good additions.
Why did we strike all the language and impact fees?
Where are you at, Bob?
My page 41, which would be whatever section we're in, section A. Took out all the language about, you know, your impact fee will be based on livable square feet and yada yada. So forth.
Because what I didn't want us to do is every time we needed to update our impact fees, have to update this document. So basically, we took all the details of how the impact fee is calculated out, but that the impact fee is still due based on that most recently adopted impact fee structure.
Okay. Which would be available to somebody who wanted to know what their impact fee would be.
Yeah.
Okay.
Another good one.
Okay, well, thank you. I think that's really well done.
Yeah.
Thanks. So next month, like I said, we'll be happy to get beyond those policies. Next month, we'll have to touch on this just to get your recommendation to approve it and move it to the council. The changes next month will either be very small in content, or really the large changes are just cut and paste and shuffling the deck.
Okay.
Before we leave this topic, Dave, Lisa and I were, and Chris and Marty, I think we were all talking about this today. How much detail is the council going to want us to go through on this? It's going to be impossible for us to provide a red line version that only... when we're done with all this, the entire document's going to be red.
I think that what you provide is just an overview of the main things. I mean, that doesn't mean that Chris won't want a red line.
Yeah, sure. I would expect that he will.
But I think you just have to talk about the broad things that are being changed. You know, you come out first with the fact that the reason why there's so many red lines is because we moved around a bunch of sections so that they would flow better. And then just talk about the main things.
Got rid of a lot of duplication, cleaned up, consolidated the impact fees to their own thing. I thought tonight went really well.
Okay. So my plan was to not provide a redlined document because it will all be red. We'll come in with a clean version and just talk through, similar to tonight, the changes we made.
Highlights.
And then just the cut and the pasting that we did.
So it's sort of like, what do I really need to know about this? What's really important about this? I mean, what are the key policies?
I mean, I view the changes that we're making as administrative. I don't know why. I shouldn't say I don't know why. I wouldn't expect the council to want to get down in the weeds on these administrative
and
changes.
And sometimes they don't.
I just want to make sure that, you know, I don't that I don't go up and spend the same 15 or 20 minutes that I just spent there thinking to themselves, this is a waste of time.
Why are we talking about this?
Yeah.
What do I care about?
It's hard to gauge.
Okay. I'll simplify it a bit.
The red line is conform document. Let them choose, right? Say that this is the conform document of all this red line, and they can decide what they want to do with it.
Sounds like we should have it in the back pocket. Mm-hmm.
Well, don't you have to submit it in advance so they have it in their reading material?
Yeah. But the question is, do you want to submit the conform document without the red lines, or do you want to submit the red line document that's mostly red line?
If you send both, at least one is a readable document. If you don't want to read all that, just read this and see if you agree with what you're reading. The only thing you don't know is what's omitted, because the entire section has been omitted. It's kind of hard to read an omitted section, right?
Yeah.
So, you got to have some over there to at least scan through and see what's been omitted if it's important to you. But most of the time when you have something like that, like a contract's been just completely bloodied up, it's better just to have the conform document to read and have the other one over there for a reference. Because
okay, well,
if you don't have
the
conform
right.
one, you're trying to read it in a conform fashion, that's almost impossible too.
Yep.
Yeah, it's that's up to me.
Okay.
It's challenging because I took all the content, and when I started, essentially when I started the reorganization of the document, I approved all changes to reorganize the document.
But if they start redlining on the red line, it's going to be miserable for you to deal with. If they redline the conform, at least it's clear you know what to do.
Yeah.
I don't think they'll redline. They will talk during the context of the meeting. They will talk about specific things within your rules and regs and ask questions about it.
And most of your red lines are in that document. You have that version. you have a bolded list that describes these are the big changes, you can just provide that, right?
Yeah.
And then say, this was restructured, and you know, it's clean.
There you go.
So I mean, it sounds like
I've done that. I've preserved
yeah,
that.
You've got that. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's a tough one to tackle. Thanks for doing that.
No problem.
Item 9 on the agenda is Mr. Dave Thomas.
This is really Marty, but it's in the yes. Earl Street Annexation.
So.
I can talk to
that
this
would be great. If you'd like.
There's a handful of lots over just adjacent to the, we call it the Woodside homes. It's the East Creek Ranch homes. They're the new homes right north of the 8040 interchange. Service Area 3 is unable to serve any additional properties. There's some property owners that have come together and asked to annex into our district. Have agreed to put in all the infrastructure that they would need, which obviously is a requirement that we would have. It's a mixture of single family and multi-family homes. It's 44 apartments and 6 single family lots.
It's already
This isn't the one that we looked at last month?
That is adjacent to this.
Oh,
same spot.
Yeah, it's.
I just assumed it was the same thing, so
yeah.
This is the difference.
Yeah,
so it was a single lot on the last month. Now
it was right.
Yeah.
Oh. Where was the single lot?
Right there.
Right there.
Okay.
Yeah.
And now which ones are?
Now the rest is this.
Oh, so that's multi. Multi-family?
It's a mixture.
In this parcel, I believe, this one.
Oh, I didn't know they were doing any multifamily.
That
would explain why there were so many ERCs.
Yes.
Yeah.
So their calculation said 44 ERCs.
Yeah.
I ran our math on our spreadsheet, and I come with a much lower number, about 28 or so.
So it's the 5 lots, this 1, 2, 3, 4... 5, it's these?
It's lots 1 and 2, which aren't included in this sheet. 1 and, I can't see, what's this say? 2? So he was able to go out and get a couple of these other ones before the meeting, but I cover it all on my memo.
Okay.
So it's all these, it's these few here, this one, and these ones, I believe.
Nothing, 2.
So these 3 up here, and then these 4 down here.
1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 on the bottom, maybe.
This 4243 is weird because it's called lot 4243, but it's one parcel.
Yeah, 1, 2, 3 on the top. 4, 5. I think that one.
This one, the 40.
Yeah, that one's in there too.
Yeah, 5.
It's 40 across the street, Chris. That was the last meeting, I believe.
Yeah, this one. Yes.
Okay, we're one.
Okay, so. It looked like we had plenty of water to provide with our surplus in there.
So I have a couple comments. One is that annexations don't bind us to provide any water. It's just bringing them into the district. Obviously, with an annexation, you're showing intent that you're going to provide that property. This is in an area where the council is going to look to us to annex these properties. There's nobody else that can serve it. My last comment is that looking at all of our growth projections in our big master spreadsheet, including this and some other willing to serve letters that we've done, in 2025 we'll be essentially at that safety buffer threshold that we've been talking about over the last couple of years of 750 gallons a minute of surplus source.
Is that equivalent to these 450?
It is.
40, oh, okay.
So, basically what I've been talking to collectively with our staff about is that we should be approaching development on a yearly basis for us to make decisions on what is going to happen 5 years from now is impossible. My feeling is that we have the water to serve. This is an area that makes sense for us to serve. As we get out a few years, if everything that we have on the books is built tomorrow, then we're going to have to slow things down one way or another. But based on our projections today, this makes sense.
So I don't particularly have an issue with this at all. I do have a question about what's the fire provision and all that kind of stuff that goes along with this.
For fire flow?
Yeah.
So we have storage, right? So we have our Atkinson storage tank and our new 2 million gallon tank that feeds the zone as well.
So that's where
fire storage is sort of built in. Adding another home doesn't make any difference.
Okay.
From a fire flow perspective, a capacity perspective, this system is currently deficient to provide the capacity they need. They will have to add infrastructure to get it to where it needs to be, and they understand that, and they've agreed to that. Okay.
So back to your prior comment about 2025. So as an example that comes to mind, so if, I know you can't move the map, but if you went left on the map, you come down the Bittner Road, and the county just approved taking what was 1 in 20 zoning and putting in
Lincoln Station,
right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So before they do that, does anybody come to us and say, hey, we want to do this, are you guys in a position to serve us?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. And we were?
Yes.
So when you say, so is that part of your calculation?
It is.
Saying,
yeah, Lincoln Station's in there, the Ascent Hotel and the Canyons area was another larger project we talked about maybe a year ago.
Okay.
This one.
But these lots weren't in your 2025 originally?
Correct.
Are there other lots like these that are going to come in the next year or two that are going to come to us?
Highly likely.
How many more lots over there?
Chris, can you go and show the stuff across from...
So
that corner one, yeah, right there.
This chunk right here is something that people have come to us about already.
Oh, wow, 5 or 6 lots there.
The reason that...
Oh, that's up, okay, that's up the road from Bell.
Multifamily,
from,
you know.
The reason 2025 is significant is that's the last year that settlement water is required to be provided to Summit Water.
Right.
So beyond 2025, our demands are dropping off. When
our supply
to Summit Water comes down, which provides more surplus to Mountain Regional to accommodate growth like this.
But you know, that assumes that they're going to have somebody else supply the water, right? I mean, they got people drawing.
Well, that's
water
what Park
down.
City Park City has agreed to do, starting in 2022.
They're going to supply it.
Correct.
Okay.
Should we consider those lots in our 2025, or are they that far out?
The challenge, and that's what I was trying to describe it, the challenge is there's so many moving pieces. In our calculations is 1,300 units of Silver Creek Village being completely built out by 2025. At the rate they're going today, there's no way that's going to happen. Right. There's also assumptions that the usage per unit is going to remain the same. Well, if 1,300 units in Silver Creek Village are there that are much tighter density, that usage per unit is going to come down, which frees up additional surplus. So
my conservative, and you've got contingency kind of built in.
Yeah, I mean, we're trying. The spreadsheet is as real as we can make it, so that we can make decisions. But my comment about approaching growth on an annual basis. That's the only way I see us being able to do it effectively, to be able to talk as a group and say, can we allow this connection or not?
Yep. Got it.
And annexation, it's not a connection. It's bringing somebody into our district boundary.
To where they can apply for.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, are there any other questions on this? Is there a motion to, do we need a motion?
Yep, a motion to recommend approval of the annexation.
Motion to recommend approval for annexation.
Is there a second?
Second.
Bob, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Was unanimous, Marty? Okay, now you're on, Dave. Update on community water.
Yeah, well.
Should be with any.
Should we just
from the last
from
few,
last month? They got a new set of orders.
Last couple of weeks, allegedly at this point, Hidden Creek is supposed to be getting that easement signed. The Vail stuff is still with Vail. I will tell you that I talked with Kim Carson and Roger Armstrong, and Scott provided a kind of a summary of community water and where we are. And my understanding is that within the next week, I'm going to have a sit-down meeting with those members of the council and Tom Fisher, the county manager, and we're going to talk to Vail.
There was the county council's open house that Karen stopped over to last week, and Kim and Roger were both there, and we gave them an update. And I voiced my concern that if we get into the summer and all of this isn't resolved, community water is source deficient. And as a result of their treatment plant failing at the end of last summer. And it's going to lead to challenges for everybody.
A crisis. There's no way to serve it.
There's one of a few things could happen. If there's no provision of water service for Mountain Regional, their tank, I would assume, will be empty on a fairly regular basis as a result of people attempting to irrigate their properties. That will lead to a lot of upset people that are communicating with the county council. So anyway, that was.
What about fire
message? We have through the interconnect agreement that was signed between us and TCFC, we have fire protection in place contractually for community water. But what they wouldn't have is the ample source to provide for their use.
Right.
Right.
So they'll be brown, but they won't be black.
Which leads into the topic of do you have anything else on the legal side, Dave?
No, I mean not really. We can technically, I mean, we technically don't need the TCFC interconnect clause because we're not going to abandon the line unless we get the interconnect, and we technically don't need the service agreement for Vail for those two on Mountain. Because, I mean, that's outside of the district anyway. So we could close if we could get these two easements. And like I said, I've been told that Hidden Creek is in the process of signing it. But Vail, with the other easement, is just being Vail. And that's where we're going to have to exert some muscle to try to knock it free.
And it is Vail, it's not TPFC.
No, it's Vail.
Right, because it's cost and manpower. It's right. That was one of our reasons.
Yeah, I mean, we've scaled back as best we can, but
we've got some exposure with some of our investment.
we've made like that.
Yep.
What are we, $30,000 or $40,000 into yep. it?
And I think there's also just general public exposure for our name because we're sort of involved in the whole mix. Okay. So it leads into this, I wouldn't be the least bit surprised to see a request from TCFC for us to provide provisional water through the existing interconnect that serves, that provides for the fire protection. And I just wanted to open that dialogue up.
Is this story going to 10 now? Is that pretty much all of your stuff, Dave?
Yeah, the only other comment I had was, Scott, did we get a notice from the Lieutenant Governor about signing up as a local government
yes.
entity? Okay.
I did. I just got that letter today in an email today, so I plan on taking care of that next week. Maybe I can touch bases with you, Dave, to make sure we're doing it right.
Yeah, that's fine. We just need to sign up before July the 1st.
Oh, yeah, that won't be a problem. We just got a letter today. We just fill out, so I think people could find us and they know our contact info.
Yep.
It's a new way they want us to sign up.
It's pretty straightforward. I saw it too. We need a map of our service area.
Yeah,
that was provided. Got that, okay.
That's all I have.
Thank you, Dave.
I would expect TCFC to request a red line to the interconnect agreement to allow for provisional water service if this annexation doesn't get done fairly quickly. I have some ideas, but I'm curious to know what your ideas are.
So that would be just for fire?
Nope, it would be to provide for the demands that cannot be provided for using their sources because they don't have enough.
Okay. So it would be
essentially irrigation.
Essentially
irrigation.
Annexation idea, right? Are they paid from their...
I'd say $100,000 plus twice the going rate for water.
Pain and suffering.
Yeah, there ought to be some community.
Well, it completely end runs the annexation agreement. Right?
Yeah.
It end runs
and termination date. Yeah.
It only end runs it if it. It's dependent upon price, right?
It's dependent upon what?
Price,
right? If we charged it $2 million, yeah. Then we could make those improvements and we wouldn't need the loan. We need a
yeah, right, we wouldn't need the loan. But I mean, seriously, I mean, we are getting into the area of damages. And if we give, you know, our product away, so to speak.
We can certainly charge them the out of district price.
There's no path to eminent domain in this case.
I wouldn't try.
Okay. I mean, they apparently have no motivation to act.
Well, there is a motivation.
Some nexus, maybe, but not down
the if the county council went public and said,
yeah,
you know,
the
these people,
have to shut this
these
place
people
down.
Aren't going to be able to have adequate water because of Vail Resort. I imagine that would shake things loose because Vail is very conscious of their public image as a publicly traded company.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm with you. Yeah, somewhere else, right?
We'd never get those easements.
No, so here's
don't
my
put
thought.
That in the minutes.
My thought is if we structure the rate to realize all the projected revenue that Lisa is projecting annually and payment for the drilling of the well amortized over the term of the agreement, mm-hmm. plus any other damages like the little bit of money that we have invested.
Yeah.
it would be above the out-of-district rate, Dave, but I think that we can set it wherever we need it to be because it's going to be in a contract.
Mm-hmm. What, or would it basically be the, what's the, like the $27, that one's the...
There's 1339 is the out-of-district rate. My math was...
To pay back the loan, though.
That's the assessment.
That's high elevation.
Yeah, the assessment. I mean, that you could almost pass that directly through. Would it be similar to that?
I didn't run that math. I'm not sure. That's 500 times $30. But with those things you mentioned, where did the rate come out? Higher than 1339. I don't remember off the top of my head. I don't want to quote it here on the table because I don't have it handy, but it's
expensive. I guess that's the question, who would pay it?
Is it expensive enough that they would start putting pressure on Dale as well?
Well, it puts, I think at the end of the day, TCFCs, they get squeezed. They may not have an outlet aside from a public, you know, bad press. TCFC would be in a position to have to pay for it if that's their only option.
So TCFC would pay, not the community water subscribers, is that what we're saying?
That was my question, but at some point, wouldn't they just push that down on the customers?
They would.
Through the PSC. I don't know how long that process will take, but it will happen. So do we want to go down that road?
I don't want to blindside you a month from now because I would expect to see something between now and then.
They got to do something in the summer.
Yeah. And summer's coming fast.
It's a politician. They don't have any water to hear you.
Yeah.
And they're going to come to us.
Has TCFC said anything yet?
I was in a meeting with, it wasn't Larry White, it was one of the guys that handles development for him. And he had asked, can you provide irrigation water? And I said, I can't answer that, you know, right now. You can provide red lines to the interconnect agreement and we'll talk about it. And I haven't seen anything. But people are blowing their sprinkler systems out.
I'm sure.
So how's the well going with?
Chris, do you want to provide a quick survey update?
Yeah, so the survey should be completed as far as the paper side of stuff next week. That will also allow us to get a preliminary plat to take to Snyderville Basin, to Mike Lures, and have this buy-off on before we go to the planning part. So
we're still trying to subdivide.
We've got, the contract is signed with Lang Equipment. We're just trying to get through the hoops. It's going to take a couple more months. It takes forever.
Okay, do we have anything else on the agenda?
I just have some more general comments here. Any closing thoughts on the interconnector community water? I can just be in touch via email when.
Yeah.
I like the idea of letting them propose what the modifications to the agreement.
Yeah.
Based on how fast they move, you'll get them, you know. Sometime in your lifetime, maybe.
We do have that operator job posted. Stay tuned on that. As many of you are probably aware, the county, I believe, closed on the Gilmore property, right, Dave?
No, not yet.
Okay.
We have signed an administrative order on consent with EPA. EPA has to sign it. And then there's a 30-day comment period, and then the county closes. Everybody's in agreement, but the process to get EPA to sign, because this is a fairly unique legal instrument that EPA has not done before, they have to staff it through an assistant attorney general for DOJ and DC, and then it has to be signed by the actual EPA administrator. As a result of that, they've told us that they think it'll take 60 days for them to simply process it for a signature. And then we'll be a 30-day comment period, and then we'll close.
So the cap, where's the Gilmore?
So the system what works.
What was that?
The system works.
Yeah, I mean, it's just it's just the way Washington, D.C. works. It's, they told us, they said, well, you know, if you guys didn't want this specialized agreement, you know, we could have signed it at the Region 8 office in Denver, but no, you guys wanted special things, so we have to get it signed in D.C. So there you go.
The reason I bring it up, Chris is going to show it up here on the screen, the county has, what, 120-some-odd acres of...
125 acres of that SS-47 basically just follows that little line on the right hand, right down there. Everything to the left of that is going to be taken out of the Superfund site and be deemed developable property, and the county is going to own that.
This chunk gets separated off.
Yep, that gets separated off as part of the basin recreation open space.
So I've been.
So this is Home Depot. Mm-hmm. This is the Justice Center, mm-hmm. and that's the state roadhouse there.
Yeah. And right next to that is the Triangle parcel, and the Triangle is going to be wholly owned by Snyderville Basin Recreation, who intends to put a trailhead down where it intersects with Round Valley and have trails up through that. But that's the only development that's going to take place on the Triangle.
Is that by where the tunnel is here?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which is about right here somewhere.
Mm-hmm. I bring it up because in that developable area, the county has talked about county service facilities. I've talked to Tom Fisher, and I believe he's relayed the request to the county council that we be considered for a potential property purchase in there for an office. And for a, you know, a maintenance.
Isn't that where Costco was going to go?
No, they have talked about there's that little piece right there that's owned by Henry Sigg,
and he has with like public
he has discussed having some retail commercial uses there, which might include a bigger store, like a Costco.
That's a good question.
That's still sitting in front of the Planning Commission.
It's that parcel there that fronts on.
Yeah, because what Henry Sigg wants to do is he would like a road to come through there and through part of SS-47.
Kind of along here.
Yeah. And the county's not opposed to that, but the county needs to, you know, after it does this initial subdivision, it's going to re-subdivide SS-47 into however many lots it needs, and it will sell off some of those lots. Right now, there's going to be one lot that's going to be public works for the county. There's a 10-acre lot that's going to be public works for Park City, probably transit bus farm type stuff. It would logically fit with Mountain Regional if Mountain Regional needs a kind of a yard or something, that your parcel or your lot would then kind of be intersecting with those other two so that there's kind of a shared access. And then the rest of it, you know, lots of other entities would like to put stuff there, recycling center, school districts have talked about maybe purchasing it. I mean, we'll see.
60 days.
We own interest in a lot outside of promontory that we've talked about as a potential site as well. That's going to be, it sounds like, surrounded by residential. We don't believe that that's as attractive as an option, just due to the uses that would be around this. So,
could you drill a well over there on SS 47?
Probably not. But you could have an office.
Get some Keeley from there.
You can. Okay, that's just an update on property. Let you know we're working on it. Water right meeting May 21st. We talked about that.
Where is that?
That is at Richens, 4 o'clock.
4 p.m. Richens. May 21. Okay.
The last thing I have, one minor is we had a council meeting yesterday, that interconnection agreement with all the master agreement parties that we've been talking about, that was signed by the council yesterday. And then finally, Dave, what's the status on the quarterly council, you know, work session type meetings with our chair and vice chair, and Roger and Doug?
They're still planning on having those.
Okay.
They'll be scheduled through Annette.
I think it's important that we do that sooner rather than later, because Lisa is going to start working on the budget for next year, and we need to discuss the master agreement rate, and I think it's important we discuss that with the council.
Had that for like late June? Is what we were thinking.
What's that?
Is that what, this late June thing, early July?
This work session is for our capital facilities plan. Mm-hmm. So that's separate. It's a separate topic. If we're gonna change the methodology on our surplus water rate,
the master
agreement rate, which we've been talking about, to make it more in line with. More fair, if you will, with our customers. I think we need to have the discussion with the council to talk about that before Lisa gets too far into the budget process.
Didn't we do that last year, though? Didn't we? What was that process where we looked at the rates and where we, you know, which tier we put them on and all of that?
Well, we talked about it. Last year, the increase was consistent with previous years, 6-ish%, something like that.
Or we went 2-2-2 over 3 years or something, didn't we? We're spread out.
You don't have for our basic rate?
Yeah, that was just our rates.
That was just our rates.
Now we're talking about the rate we're charging to Summit Water.
That's the master.
Yeah, the master.
Okay. And the methodology we've talked about is setting that rate such that when it gets delivered to Weber Basin on the Summit Water will have some cost to deliver that water. At the point of delivery, it's similar in price to our retail price. And that'll be a significant change compared to how we've done it in the past.
Price it more like its market value.
Yep.
So what do you mean to meet with the council?
I think that we should talk about that topic in this these proposed meetings that the council's talked about.
Right. Kim said she wanted to do that. She wanted to have, you know. Okay. So are you gonna get that on the calendar?
Yeah, so did Dave. Should I just email on that, Dave? Is that the best way to handle that?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The last item is, this is a draft of our water quality report. It's a significant improvement over last year's
report.
Please take a look at it at your convenience. We'd like comments back by the 24th in 2 weeks. We want to incorporate those and have it ready by the beginning of June.
When are these due again? I'm sorry.
It's due by the beginning of August, or July.
No, our comments?
May 24th.
Thank you.
Nice personal touch there, Scott.
Smiling.
Like that?
Yeah, smiling.
I've never seen that.
I like the employee photos too. They're all men though.
Good observation.
That stuff comes out.
We grabbed some examples from around the country. This is where we landed.
How does this get distributed, Scott?
Excuse me?
How does this get distributed?
Good question. It gets posted on our website. Anybody who has the Express Bill Pay gets it as a PDF, I believe. Is that correct?
Right. And then it's a link also on our website that, you know, our normal customers will have a web address to go right to this page.
Yeah. There is no paper distribution box. We've talked about having some on our front counter and having them available when we do these county open houses and things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
But no mass mailing.
No mass mailing.
But if they request it, we're happy to send.
Yeah, yeah.
It'll be nice. We'll have it like on a table for a brochure. Yeah. If we had it
at
the open house.
Did you guys get a lot of action at the other two or no?
We were only invited to that one.
Oh.
Yeah. But we had a few customers come up and they were looking at their accounts and they loved the new meters. They were excited.
That's okay, all I have. I don't know if there's any other comments by anybody else or.
Okay, we'll be adjourned at 7:45.
Yay!
Thank you, everybody.
It's a great place, right?
Yeah.
Actually,
tax.
Yeah.
Very supportive.
So what?
Right.
What was your favorite?